Hello and welcome to this edition of Storage Media Group's weekly podcast. I'm Ian Crowley for SearchStorage.com, and today I'm joined by John Twigo, chairman of the Data Management Institute. John, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, Ian.
All right, let's get started. You recently wrote a piece on performance and capacity in the data center for Storage Magazine. You mentioned that storage vendors seem to have always focused on capacity-centric solutions rather than IOPS-centric. Why is this?
Well, I mean, let's back into that this way. In the past, as a friend of mine used to put it, kind of bought storage by the pound, you know, sort of like ground beef at a butcher shop. Mainly, companies were concerned about capacity. They didn't want to run out of capacity, and it was a capacity play. In fact, I wrote an article in Scientific American probably 5 years ago where I interviewed all the guys who were the like vice presidents of business for Seagate and Western Digital and all the other drive manufacturers at the time, and they said that the industry is rewarded when they increase capacity on a drive, but they don't see as much action if they just improve things like the performance of the disk drive itself. They don't see as big a return on that investment. So it's been a capacity play. Usually when somebody wants to brag about storage, they keep on talking about how they increase the capacity year over year to deal with a burgeon of data that seems to be endless and as predictable as death and taxes as one of the inevitable things in life. So we went out looking for capacity, and the industry always provided capacity.
Awesome. On the other side of the scale is IOPS. What factors led some vendors to refocus their products on IOPS performance?
Well, you've been hearing a lot from vendors recently, announcements of big brags that they're doing about improved speeds and feeds of their rigs. It's still a capacity play when you think about it, because most of the high IOPS rigs that are out there, though not all of them, have basically leveraged a technique called short stroking in order to get more performance out of an expansive pool of disk drives. And basically with short stroking, they use only a section of the disk. They put as many read-write heads to work on writing data as they possibly can, and they come up with these numbers on IOPS performance that are in the 400,000 range or whatever. What you're doing is you're paying for an awful lot of disk drives you only use a portion of, and they're consuming an awful lot of electricity. The focus on the IOPS from the standpoint of what I was writing about in the article had to do with a gating factor on that technique that's beginning to impact a lot of companies. What we're seeing in the New England metro area, what we're seeing in Northern and Southern California, and just about anywhere where there's a clustering of data centers, is not only has the cost of energy gone up, but also the availability of additional energy has declined. Remember the power grids in most of the country were built to support the 1900s masters of the universe, the big companies that were doing manufacturing and so forth. And the grids were designed to bring power to their locations, not necessarily to solve the peripheral needs of everybody else who consumes power. Obviously, we're not in a 1900s world anymore. We're in a 21st century world, and data centers are some of the biggest power pigs on the planet. Within the data center, surprisingly, there's been some research recently, actually very straightforward stuff out of Dell and others, that show that storage is now the huge power pig in the data center. It's no longer servers. Those have been consolidated or virtualized or whatever. It's not network equipment. Those have become more fuel efficient, if you will. But disk drives consume a lot of electricity, especially when you have hundreds and hundreds of them, or thousands of them, depending on how large your shop is. They are the big power sink in the data center. So we have this business constraint of where am I going to get more electricity and how much is it going to cost me just to fuel the drives with the electricity they require, and should I be trying to get a performance by short-stroking massive numbers of disks? Now, there's a great article on this, by the way, that you should probably direct your readers to. It's over at Storage Performance Council, and it was a longitudinal assessment of where the payoff is from short stroking. It turns out once you get beyond a certain number of drives in a pool, you start to see a decline in your return on investment in terms of performance generally. So that's led to a consideration of other options. What I've always seen in the shops I go to is that you really are talking about two different kinds of storage. You're talking about storage that's required for performance to receive data. I call it capture storage. It captures data as rapidly as an application can deliver it. And given the speeds and feeds of processors and of networks, the data is coming at you pretty fast and furious. You need a certain tier of storage that's capable of delivering the performance that's required to handle that I/O. However, the preponderance of the data from our research at Data Management Institute, probably up to 70% of the capacity of every disk drive you already own today, is data that's gone to sleep. And it's data that maybe you have to hold on to, some of it for governance, risk, and compliance. Some of it you want to hold on to because it's business intelligence or it's whatever justification there is for holding on to it. Unfortunately, everybody holds on to everything because nobody wants the onerous, burdensome job of cleaning out the junk drawer. So we've got 70% of the capacity on every disk drive we already own that actually is never accessed. So that stuff probably belongs in a second tier of storage, what you would call the capacity tier. Now, the objectives of those two tiers are quite different from an energy consumption standpoint. The high IOPS stuff, we want to get IOPS per watt. We want to get the fastest performance we can get at the lowest power consumption that we can wrangle. And that would define kind of that capture tier as a general architectural objective. And then the capacity tier, we want to get the most capacity at the lowest wattage consumption we can possibly get, because this stuff doesn't need to be accessed frequently, so we're not concerned so much that it might be a little slower, but we are concerned about how much wattage, how much electricity it's eating up in our infrastructure. So that's kind of a long explanation, but it kind of sets the stage for the discussion.
Sure. So obviously energy is a big part of this. Besides power consumption, what other metrics can be improved by adopting an IOPS-centric data center?
Well, I don't know that it's we all want faster, okay? I mean, that's I don't know that there's a hardcore metric on it. I think we want fast and we want reliable when it comes to storage, right, when it comes to the capture tier. I'm liking what I'm seeing in various vendor configurations. I think XIV just did this, or IBM just did this on their XIV rig, but prior to them, the real spearhead in this was XIO, which is formerly Xiatec, where they use some SSD or general memory, if you do this with virtualization, as a matter of fact, but SSD to basically optimize the performance of the disk. So we do something called, some people call it sublun tiering, some people call it auto tiering. There are a lot of different names for it. It's basically when we're writing data down to a hard drive, if it's data that is getting a lot of accesses after we write it, it gets copied temporarily into a memory component. And the memory component, be it SSD or DRAM or whatever you're using, services that data at 20,000 IOPS or somewhere around that level, because solid state's a lot faster than disk in terms of no rotational latency, et cetera. And basically, once the data cools off, we write it back down to the disk again, or just repoint the pointer so that segment of data that was stored up on the memory device is now pointed back to the storage device. Then you need a back-end process that over a period of time, as the data itself becomes cold, moves it into the capacity configuration. That's what I was describing in the article, and really it's a power play, because even if companies aren't confronting it today, read National Electricity Reliability Council reports, or the group that do the metrics on the power grid for the U.S. government, and they publish all their reports online at Department of Energy. Just do a Google on it, NERC, National Electricity Reliability Council. You'll find the stats on where they see problems and where they believe problems are burgeoning in the power grid. And, the next big evolution of this is going to hit the center of the country around St. Louis, where there's a lot of switching between, a lot of telecommunication stuff is located in the St. Louis area. So they will also be subject to brownouts, blackouts, high cost of electricity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And difficulties are front of mind for companies that are located in these areas. I'll give you an example. I mean, one of my clients is a pharmaceutical house up in Connecticut, and a couple years back, the FDA issued an order that, you know, they needed all clinical test trial data around drugs to be made available on demand, usually via the web, to FDA analysts. If it turns out people start dropping dead from the medicine, they want to go back over the clinical test trial and see if they missed anything. And the IT manager at that data center in Connecticut said, look, we got more money than God. You know, we own the patent on erectile dysfunction medicine. So, you know, we can go out and buy whatever storage rig we want to buy. But the problem is I can't get another lick of electricity dropped into my data center. The grid is saturated. So, you know, these become issues for companies going forward, and I think it's going to become an important gating issue on how you design and configure your infrastructure for storage going forward.
Awesome. So you talked a little bit about flash in that explanation. Can you describe a little bit more what role it plays in increasing IOPS for Watt?
Sure. You know, I'm not a huge flash advocate. I think they're subject to oversell like all the other technologies in the storage business, and people seem to be forgetting that we're spoofing in order to keep flash viable, because flash itself runs into a lot of errors, a lot of problems with memory wear, which they've thrown kind of arcane rating schemes at it. When you buy a 1 gigabyte flash module or whatever, it actually has 4 gig of memory on it, and they're swapping out memory through kind of an interesting rating scheme. In other words, the technology I don't think is fully baked, and I think it's too expensive, but used selectively, not as a write target, not as the thing that you write your data to, but rather in this augmenting role with disk, where there is some code that's written in the disk array that actually just swaps out hot data into the flash device just while it's still hot, and then swaps it back down, is a much more effective use of flash memory. And it optimizes the performance of disk. It lets you get rid of short stroke drives, and basically to create a complementary infrastructure where, you know, two different storage modalities, flash and disk, both deliver significantly to the overall throughput of the device. I think that's very smart technology. That's a very good way to go. Unfortunately, you know, most of the flash guys have dreams of avarice where they think they're going to replace all the disk that's out there. And who knows, that may happen if the industry keeps jacking up the price of disk drives and blaming it on the Thailand floods. But bottom line is flash is not cost competitive in my book right now. And also, given the wear that occurs in flash, some of my larger clients, credit card companies and so forth, that transact a million transactions per second, they say, look, we'd be changing out these flash devices more frequently than people change their underwear if we were using them as write devices, because we'll simply burn them out. And we do that on a daily, weekly basis. You know, I mean, that's pretty expensive when you're talking $10,000 a pop or something for a flash unit. So stick either with standard DRAM or get into one of these complementary schemes where you're just getting the best characteristics of flash to complement the best characteristics of disk, and you're going to dramatically reduce the wattage you have to purchase for delivering the IOPS that your most demanding applications require.
Great. So there's obviously a few issues still with flash. What are the different options for building a data center with high IOPS, and flash, combining other components with it?
Well, again, I'd turn to the XIO guys and give them a good interview one of these days, because they've got a good story going on. What they're doing is basically bricks of storage with a fixed capacity and the option to add in you know, some flash components to it that basically provide this this sublun tiering kind of function. They call it hot sheets because, and it's patented by that name, because the guy who thought it up over there thought he was hot sheet. So they actually named the patent after him. It's really cool. The other approach you can take here, not to just keep tooting their particular model, is if you virtualize storage. You know, virtualization of storage is basically another way to gain a huge IOPS bump. I mean, some people say up to 400% faster off of any storage you already have, because the data, when it comes into the virtualization server, whatever's holding the storage hypervisor, basically is servicing those I/O requests out of DRAM on the server, and it's spoofing. It's telling that telling the application that the write's been received, and you can go on and process the next transaction, whatever it may be, when in fact it's been queued in memory, and it's waiting its turn to be written to the back-end storage, which could be just about anything. I like that model as well, and I think that's sort of the everyman's version of what I was describing as a hardware solution. What XIV has done with Flash on, or what IBM's done with Flash on XIV, what XIO's done with Flash on their ICE intelligent storage element rigs. You can do the same thing if you virtualize your storage, and then you load up the server that's holding the virtualization software engine with a ton of RAM. And that's what I do here in my office, as a matter of fact. Sitting right around from me is about 11 terabytes of storage. It's all virtualized, and I have about, I don't know, probably 60, maybe a little bit less, maybe 40 gig of RAM in the server. And it's faster than any rig on the planet right now. So, you know, IOPS is kind of an externalized measurement of throughput, and what I'm most concerned about here is the gating factor that's introduced by energy cost and energy availability.
Sure. So for IT professionals looking to evaluate IOPS-centric data centers, what are some important factors to consider?
Well, first of all, for any data center, I'd try to find a place that's reasonably friendly in terms of environmental. So you're looking for a data center where there's a nice, juicy supply of power, and maybe some regulation on the power companies there, so they aren't robbing you blind. But I'd also be looking for perhaps utilizing that two-tier strategy. I'm working with a governmental entity right now is trying to create a cloud that will be used by many of their sub-agencies, a storage cloud, and we're defining actually two clouds, one that's a real fast cloud, basically internal for their use, because, your IOPS are going to go down in a cloud service anyway, based on the gating factor imposed by the network that's used to access the cloud. So if it's a public cloud, you're still dealing with the realities of Einstein and the limitations imposed by how fast you can push data across a wire. Internally, what they're doing is they're building out a cloud service for their internal users that will basically leverage the combination of SSD and disk. And they just have to make sure that they've always got power, coming into that facility, because it's going to determine the success of the strategy. Now, on the flip side of that, they're creating another cloud, and this one is suitable both for public and private deployment, that leverages the greatest technology that I've seen in a while, which is the ability to create high-capacity storage by joining a tape repository with a front-end server with some disk in it that basically is serving as a caching engine and as the provider of services for NAS-based access. I call that NAS on steroids. So what you've got is basically the ability to create an NFS mount, but the back-end storage where that data is being written, and this is the retention storage, not the capture storage. So speeds and feeds aren't as important. If you have to wait anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute and a half to get a file back out of this repository, you don't really care, because it's comparable to the worldwide wait that we're all used to when we're dealing with PDF files stored on websites like TechTarget or whatever. Basically, that's huge storage capacity at very, very low power consumption. And, because tape has obvious advantages when it comes to low power. A few light bulbs are enough to energize the robots that are inside of tape, and the data isn't always on spinning rust that's constantly moving. So, it makes for a great two-tier solution, and they seem to be going in that direction. They're trying to pass it through all the different levels of management there. It's kind of a new idea, and some of the government agencies are a little reluctant to embrace new.
Great. Thanks so much for your time today, John.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I'll keep putting whatever observations I hope are salient to the readers up there online and Storage Magazine, and I'm delighted to be writing it.
If you're interested in more from John Twigo and our other data storage experts, be sure to check out searchstorage.com and Search Storage Magazine. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.